Welcome to the World of Wisdom podcast. My name is Amit Paul, and today we get to talk about coherence, I think, and probably large systems transformation, maybe a little bit about ownership. I don't know. Let's see where we can get into. I'm really happy to have just met you, Dakota Apostolou. Yeah. Is that right?
Yeah.
Welcome to the podcast.
Well, good to be here. Really good to be here.
I'm going to start us off with the question that I always ask, because partly I'm lazy and partly it just gives us a lot of room to move wherever we need to go. It's a simple question, and you answer it as you see fit. But who are you, Dakota Apostolou?
Who am I? Wow, great question. Who am I? I am another one of... Where should I start with that? It's interesting who I am and associating that with my work when we're so much more than the work. And who I am, I'm someone who just really yearns to become more self-aware and like help grow my awareness, becoming more aware of itself and doing that in a way in the world where we can actually build things that have meaningful, long-lasting impact. And not impact in the sense of impact in the sense of creating frameworks that are evolutionary and support the development of humanity and of right relations with the earth and really help us enter a frame or an ecology of us as earthlings in right relations with the earth. And how do we actually do that through our way of being in our lifestyle? Those are some of the things that really highly motivate me.
How did you come into this work?
I had speech impediments as a child, and so I also traveled quite a bit. My mother moved around quite a bit, and one of the things that I was really drawn to as a child is expressing myself through Legos and building and drawing. And so I formally started training in architecture at the age of 12. And then trained and then, got my master's degree from the Frank Lloyd Wright School of Architecture. And that work has really informed me. That's really like my natural skill set is architecture and design. That's what just comes very easy to me. And what's involved in my practice was, very fortunate to do uber high-end homes right out of school. And then felt that how ridiculous that is in terms of the context of the world is like on fire. We don't need more oligarch homes in the world. Then move my practice to how do we create impact through architecture? How do we create systems that allow people to have access to regenerative housing that restores the health of the ecology, that restores and revitalizes the health of our communities and economies? And so that did quite a bit of work with manufacturers, and that really then evolved into actually one of the core flywheels in my perception is the economics. And how do we start to really redefine the economics and the access to housing for all and use that for a flywheel to bring together the future makers to accelerate and be of service to the larger regenerative movement that's afoot? And that's what that's what moved me into Cohere, which is very focused on how do we redefine the economics of home ownership with a focus on community regenerative living?
There seems to be something about you architects at this moment. I've been reading Christopher Alexander with
so good.
Deep appreciation and this sort of profound way of seeing something. Can you, just out of curiosity, it's like a sidetrack, but can you speak to why that seems to be? Like what is it from, yeah.
Yeah, I think for my sense of it or perception is there's fundamental organization to the patterns of reality in the universe, and really good design, really good architecture gets at what are the fundamental geometries. Every plant, every life system has fundamental embedded geometry. And when we compose space through a meticulous use of geometry, or really like it's like leveraging the underlining ordering system. Like even impromptu, like improv jazz still has a very structured underlining order that you can flow with. And I find that architecture is taking that to the built environment and the physicality of existence. And there's just like it occurs to me oftentimes there's a disposition in the architecture community to see what are those underlining patterns. And if we can understand those, we can create things that just flow with greater ease.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, that seems to be like right in the smack in the center of sort of the living systems paradigm as well, like those underlying patterns and that's perhaps the selection bias, but there is that ability to see with other than just your eyes, kind of that deeper, bigger feeling, like felt sense seeing, like another centimeter, another centimeter, another centimeter, that's where the door should be, you know, and not more, you know. It's like the
I love it. It's like the art, like a friend of mine was saying this the other day, it's like engineering is the is the art of science, and architecture is the science of art. And it's like really understanding like what makes something beautiful, and there is a science to it. It's not this random thing. There are fantastic traditions, there are incredible tool sets. It's a huge source of inspiration to me in my life.
Let's return to that that aspect of sort of the regenerative housing and the restoration of ourselves, I guess, for short. What are the components to that? Like what speaks more to it? Maybe it's clear to people, but I don't necessarily.
Yeah, I think the idea of regenerative, meaning like a rebirth, like a birthing a new inside the context of so much like the poly crisis or the meta crisis, how so many things are collapsing at once. Evolution is so slow until the pressure's on. And now we've got all the pressures all at once, which to me is very exciting in terms of what we can leapfrog into and just skip a bunch of the old systems that have been entrenched that really hold back a more exalted way of being human on the planet. Housing to me is a fundamental component of that. And how do we provide housing that is generative, that actually embodies and pulls together a deeper human purpose and meaning in connection to the world, to the connection to the earth? This is something I really loved about Frank Lloyd Wright's work and his like deep, deep connection to his church is nature, and how do we design in a kind of a Shinto sort of way where we're exalting the natural beauty to be in that deeper power of what's there. With Cohere, what we're focusing on is community housing that's member-owned. How do we build member-owned communities that are interconnected around the world? And we believe that it's imperative to start to change the limitation of access that's only grown worse. With BlackRock now, was it 10% of the U.S. housing market is just held by one corporation and is growing rapidly, and how speculative the housing market is, which keeps people from actually having the ability to even gain real home ownership. What we've been working on and obsessed with in Cohere is decentralizing access to ownership so anyone can get the upside of growing a pool of regenerative real estate.
Mm. Okay, let's say something more. Yeah. Carry on.
Yeah, okay, cool. Yeah. Yeah, the big thing for us is, you know, as we're looking at the work, the patterns in the world, is one of the crazy things right now is the rise of depression and from isolation and how isolated people are. And as it becomes more apparent that the standard neoliberal crony capitalistic system, how that is no longer very effective, and the risk to reward ratios of this system are no longer very valuable, or less valuable. There is this drive for people to come together, and you can see this in all of the different cultures, if it's the lying flat movement, or if it's, you know, riots in Paris. There is a fundamental need for people to come together. and what is the right armature? And so here we're in Berlin. We're here, you know, running a Cohere. We have 25 to 30, you know, future makers from around the world here at this property. And we have a pipeline of properties that we're assessing. We bring together incredible people who really care. We're really working on businesses that can help move humanity forward or help move technology forward that's invaluable to right relation to the earth. We bring those people together and figure out through human connection and through trust building, how do we activate each other's work? How do we find, like, what are the threads that we can, this person connects with that person, can build this? Oh my gosh. Those types of conversations tend, in my experience, tend to happen around the kitchen island at 2 a.m. And we're like, holy shit, this is how I can turbocharge my foundation through this. And so we're fostering that. Concurrently, what we're doing is we're vetting properties to bring into the community-owned real estate pool. So we're here in Berlin assessing this property. Then we're in Bali, Guatemala, Peru. And we bring our members together to further activate each other. And in the process, vet, are these properties worthwhile investments for our community to pool our resources and our know-how together to bring into the pool and pop up more and more of these hubs, more and more of these member-owned regenerative hubs as we can.
Mm. And it's interesting because I'm noticing myself going, like, in terms of the social interactions and, like, bringing people together, I'm like, I've heard that. Kind of, and I'm not trying to be dismissive. I'm just saying, like, here are the people talking about that. And then you come to the ownership piece, and I'm like, here's something new. It's not like me going to live at a compound where, you know, I have no stake, and when I'm done, or like if I get out, thrown out of the community, or like if I, whatever happens, then I'm out. Like I have nothing. You know, I've invested whatever I've invested, and then that's that. I just need to find another compound in a way. But here it sounds to be like you're doing something quite different in terms of that ownership. You want to talk to that piece? Because it seems so central.
Absolutely. It's, you know, a really important piece of this. And okay, so one of the things for us was that early on we saw, prior to Cohere, we were working for Rennie Davis and the Foundation for Humanity, building out a $25 million showcase down near the biospheres in Arizona. And right as he was closing his round, he fell ill and passed away within a few days. Then what that left us with was we need to develop a decentralized way to pop up as many of these communities as possible. What often happens, in one of the things we were noting earlier, is that we're intentionally not intentional communities because of the association of what that holds. We are building more innovation hubs, co-living for innovators. But some of the patterns of the codependency that happens when there's not a sophisticated ownership system often happens in the intentional community space, where someone comes to a community, they get, you know, comped room and board, but for the next 10 years, they build out a massive food forest and build a building. And they're increasing the property value, we can say very quantifiably, 100K or whatever it may be. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And then there's a power structure that shifts at the top, and all of a sudden, that individual feels like they need to leave, but they have no equity. They have no balanced energy exchange for the energy they put in. So we saw something very, very critical, something we can coin the term of dynamic equity. If you put in contribution to Cohere, you increase the value of the assets, you gain equity in Cohere. Mm. We're doing that through security tokens that are SEC compliant. The Securities and Exchange Commission of the U.S. government is, the U.S. government is a very regulated environment, obviously. And what we saw 2 years ago is that if obviously blockchain creates high fidelity, creates all this incredible opportunity that basically unlocks Wall Street type financial tool sets to anybody who wants it, who has the wherewithal to understand it. And so what we saw a couple of years ago is it seems pretty guaranteed that the regulators are going to come into the crypto space and regulate crypto as a security, as a tradable financial instrument. That seems pretty apparent. And now that it's occurring, it makes sense to us. And that's why we decided early on, let's tokenize, let's fractionalize the ownership of Cohere, but let's do that in a way that's compliant with the SEC and the US regulators. Because if we can do that, then we're pretty much set everywhere else. And so we've tokenized, we fractionalized the ownership of Cohere so that when people contribute, when our members contribute, they can gain actual equity, like stock options, in the company. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so we start to operate like a co-op in some ways, but we're leveraging corporate law in corporations in a way the corporate structure and the precedent law that goes with it is an incredible apex of human imagination. Like, it's bonkers in the sophistication. And we believe that's an incredibly powerful tool set for us to apply, that corporations don't have to mean, you know, monocropping or monopolies, buying out the competition, shutting it down to the demise of the planet. We actually believe these are powerful tool sets that we can use. We just need to repurpose them towards, you know, a win-win situation for everybody.
So, because I mean, and also if you look at, you know, even if you read guys like Ray Dalio or someone like that, I mean, what they would point to is like, sure, you might be able to like gamble high and go into crypto and or whatever and make a quick buck on speculation, but it's speculation. But for a normal middle income person, it's very, very hard to get into asset classes that are geared for really proper long-term value because the investment is so high. You were talking about BlackRock before with regards to, but like property and land are one of the most, like the safest asset classes over time and like the highest yielding ones as well. And most likely, especially in the time and age we live in right now, if you can have assets where things are able to sort of really build value or regenerate or actually be able to sustain even part of the community or so forth, then with food and stuff like that, that is likely a very safe bet. And it's hard for someone to get in on the ground floor because you'd be, you know, have loans up your ears and like up over your ears and like do that whole thing. So like be part of that value increase over time would be tricky for normal people. So it resonates so strongly. What you're doing, and what's the state of the project right now? I mean, you've come pretty far. This is not a paper product.
Yeah, we've been working at this all day, every day for the last 2+ years, and I feel like the foundation work is complete. And like when you're building a house, the foundation work is hard, dirty, and messy. And I feel like now we're framing the walls, and like we're actually like the space is really taking shape. And so where we're at right now, we spent a year on the legal framework. We spent a year going through some, you know, Techstars Accelerator, going through building out our online community hub, prototyping these co-living experiences around the world. Now we're really entering this phase of fine-tuning the process and fine-tuning and starting to raise capital for larger real estate acquisitions. And so now we're at this point of like things are stabilized. We're a few months out from profitability. And so we're raising a small bridge round right now to get us to profitability and to allow us to grow our team more quickly. And then we'll begin to raise large amounts of capital for these vetted real estate that we've been doing due diligence on. And so it feels like this time of, there's always so much more to integrate. One of the things that's a really important first principle for us is humility. And our goal is to house the future makers, house the leaders. And so we are not an org that's like, we need to figure it all out. Like, we don't need to reinvent, you know, decentralized governance. We don't need to reinvent these models. We actually bring those leaders who've been doing it their entire lives and integrate those pieces as we need them and as we grow the health of the organism. Yeah, so it's a really exciting time.
I'm curious, and let me know how much you can talk about it, but like in terms of this capital raising, because that's really interacting with the belly of the beast, if you will,
yeah.
In terms of the detrimental or non-regenerative dynamics, I think, at least as I perceive it in the moment. Like what is that? Because it sounds like you also have some multi-capital thinking in there, like in terms of like if you contribute to the property, then you can kind of exchange, let's say, monetary capital to for time or for investment or for
yes
so forth. So can you speak a bit more to that? How does that work?
Absolutely. I think that many of the capital systems we find are the heart of the beast, like the belly of the beast, as you're saying. There's in the heart of the problem, the heart of some of the problems, some of the very deep systematic problems. I think venture capital is an example of that, and the incentive for maximum extractive exits. Mm-hmm. In my point of view, one of the terribly bad incentives is that for shareholders, you get cashed out predominantly between rounds or when the company's acquired by the next biggest monopoly. Mm-hmm. So there's this trend right now. It's gone from like 4 mega corporations own every industry down to 3, pushing now to 2, and just the consolidations into the conglomerates. I don't think that's good for the world, as far as I can tell. What happens is when a company is, their shareholders or the most powerful shareholders are looking for a forced exit to a maximum valuation that isn't necessarily have anything to do with reality. It's just how much can we get other people or the public to believe in an IPO that the thing is worth $1 billion yet it's never made any money. Mm-hmm. We've been very careful around what capital we bring in. We rather not do the thing if it's going to get hijacked by misaligned interests. So we've been really looking at raising from our community, raising internally, minimizing debt, and not, you know, falling in the trap of that whole system. And we also want to reward, and we think it's imperative to reward all the types of capital. Why is it like, and this is a big part of the issue with gentrification, is when one group of people can get access to the increased property values, but not others, especially those who've ancestrally lived in those locations, that doesn't work. That's very, very unhealthy. And so one of the things for us that we believe is a step in the right direction is what happens when the stonemason is getting bonused in securities in the global real estate pool. What happens with a local Guatemalan family that all of a sudden has a wallet, and the parents might have no idea what the hell that means, but their kids do, and all of a sudden they have now a security token that's going up in value commensurate to the global whole, and we've just turbocharged, and they actually have a value and an incentive to steward a regenerative project because they're actual equity holders in it. So we want access to equity for all types of capital, for wisdom, for labor, as well as for fiat or for investments of land or other infrastructure.
That's cool. And then, I mean, what you're talking about in terms of security tokens, it's not just some computer standing off in a garage somewhere, doing calculations. It's actually underpinned by an actual asset, which is actual land, which is actual square meters somewhere.
Yes.
And that is, that's a completely different story.
And it's, I think, a really, really, really imperative one. And this is reductionist, but I find it valuable. Pre-Nixon, was it Nixon or Reagan? I think Nixon and Thatcher, the creation of fiat. We really believe that if we're going to slowly, slowly help create a new currency, the first thing is we need the gold. We need the gold that underpins the value. The paper money is just paper money if it doesn't have real value. Now, it's different with the U.S. government and the Fed when you have like the military-industrial complex backing the value of the money. Like, that's real power. But for us, we see the most important assets are regenerative assets. And if we can build those and create a pool of those, and that's backing that's community owned, now we can move into, can we mint a currency token that's then pegged to that? And so Cohere is part of a much larger strategy. It in and of itself is a prototype on how do we create rent-to-own models? How do we reinvent how do we test systems wherein everyone can become an owner of the pool of assets as part of a larger strategy that we're just one small piece of a much larger constellation. People are looking at how do we build real circular economies. And we're just biting off a little piece of a much bigger thing that is emerging right now.
Yeah. That's fascinating. Because I'm also hearing you speak to that central aspect of like the exchange versus the use value, like in terms of what, I mean, and I had Indy Johar on and he's speaking to that, like with regards to like our computers and this microphone and like the clothes that I wear and all that stuff. I mean, the exchange value is one thing, but the use value is another. And I also spoke to like a Danish designer, she's been working with actually built environment design as well. She's not an architect, but still. Mm. And she's speaking about that central part. Like we need to look at the use value. Like, I mean, this house that I'm fortunate enough to own and where my family can live, I mean, the use value, even though it has a high exchange value, the use value for me is like, it's almost like that Visa commercial. It's like, what's that? It's like priceless, you know? It's like that safety and security to have a place to come home to is a completely different type of currency altogether.
Yeah, it really is. Someone was sharing with me, sharing how Jordan Hall is sharing this thing around this typology of different types of return on investment. And capital is obviously one, but inside the context of our, like, this is Alnor with Brave Earth down in Costa Rica, I think he speaks really poetically, like the context. If we're not relevant to the context, what the hell are we doing? In the context right now, in a like a planetary ecosystem collapse that we are in, like it's no one, like we are in it right now. There are certain things that have real value, like beyond just cash flow. What is the value to know that we have coherent community and the infrastructure for thriving life? Like, how valuable is that? Like, what is the value of ones and zeros when you have a shortage of food? Even in like, and we tend to think in the rich world that we're insulated from this, and it's not the case. I mean, COVID really showed that. Like in the United States, cities have like, was it 10 days of food supply, if that? So not to be doomsday, but it's just like the context is everything. And that's Cohere. I think Cohere is in a toddler stage. I was talking to Indy last week. You know, he's like pointing to like some really, really succinct as he does, succinct pieces where the Cohere model can mature. And for us, we recognize that Cohere in its current iteration is one baby step to this much bigger thing that we're committed to. And we're just constantly looking at like, how do we further refine the system? Like, do we need a Swiss foundation now to hold the asset pool? We're talking to Owasa, who's doing incredible work. And can we leverage their trust model for the properties we bring in? And so all this to just say is like the piece for us, another principle for us is endless reiteration and refinement. And we don't have all the answers, not by a long shot. We have practical solutions to move the ball forward to the next step, the next horizon. But it's a sequence.
Yeah. I'm trying to think of where to go from here. That's fascinating. I'm curious about sort of the... It's one of the pieces that I'm struggling with when we talk about this ownership. I mean, it's so central. We spoke about it just before we started recording that like, okay, there's a way that I can make a living with lots of freedom and kind of do work from time to time and like, you know, just make enough money and then be done with it kind of thing. And there's a way where I can kind of invest myself and apply myself to, let's say, larger scale projects, which would actually build a balance sheet, actually build, you know, equity. Something that can generate and yield something going forward, and I'm much more inclined towards the other part because I know that life is unexpected, and you know I might wake up tomorrow with a terminal illness or something might happen. Who knows? You know, and so like I want those around me to have that ownership for whatever that might be worth, or like something which has like a real asset underpinning. So like to get into that space seems important. And where am I going with this? Now, what I'm curious about is like, because you spoke to the context relevant piece, and I'm wondering, there's a part of me where I can understand that ownership and like stock investments or whatever opportunistic high yielding activity I can engage in is probably not going to be there for that much longer. At least that's how I see the trajectory of where we're headed, you know? And at the same time, like owning this house feels good. Like, I'm so steeped in a mold where ownership is so central, you know, and like there are different behaviors that I connect with security that makes me feel safe, that I think, I mean, stepping back a little bit objectively, I can be like, does that really make sense? Like, is that true? And yet, like, my emotional part, like the emotional component, is so steeped in that mold and like so incredibly anchored in that reality or that story of the reality that we're currently living in. So I'm just curious about, because you talked about the inner component of this whole project as well. So I wonder if there's a bridge in that little ramble.
That's a great bridge. Yeah. I think the bridge that I see in that into kind of the inner coherence building is, I think this piece around really holding the layers of self and holding the awareness that, in my point of view, we're creating our reality. This is like literally just a construct of our thinking with delayed space-time factors. And there's, of course, a need to fundamentally take care of the body and take care of the material realm. Like, that is, I think, the whole point, like my worldview of the awareness inside the human condition experiencing linearity, and to have the opportunity to also experience matter, is a huge piece of this, is honoring the experience of the physical nature of existence of the body. And so creating those fundamental base of that, of shelter, is so imperative for us to then take into what are the sociological and physiological needs that then can move into the actualization needs. Mm. And we're kind of really working from that bottom of like, let's take care of shelter, with the awareness that we're growing towards coherence. What does it mean? Like, the whole point, the whole name of Cohere and the brand is, and the meaning for Devin and I is, how do we reach inner coherence? How do I actually live as a coherent human being in right relation with myself? And might create a context where I can more readily help my awareness become more aware of itself and become more aware of how I'm creating my reality around me through my embedded behavioral patterns. And that's where fundamentally I think the safety piece, and there's this huge potency, in my opinion, when we have communities of people who hold a shared superordinate goal around how do we reach inner coherence? And then from that feeling of inner coherence, how do we create a coherent field, an agreement reality bubble? Then how do we connect those agreement reality bubbles around a gestalt of hope rather than unconsciously tapping into some crazy gestalt? And then interconnecting those. And then from that, the manifestation of physical safety or physical armature is actually manifest. Like, it's from the trust and the deep human connection that it's much easier for us to pool our resources to then fundamentally build in real matter infrastructure. Mm-hmm. And so it's this interesting thing where we're starting at the bottom, but also the top of the actualization pyramid, where we need both, and we need to, like, so I don't mean to ramble, but it's, I think there's just a really potent flywheel of coherence building that then leads to the safety and deep connection that allows us to actually build the physical infrastructure that then is more armature for our further ease of becoming self-aware.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I really appreciate that. And the thing to me, like, sort of the node, or like that, the fulcrum for me is that balance between, like, to be very blunt, it's like I long for community in a certain way, you know, but I'm also steeped in a, I mean, it's this, I hear it in some of these like theories around, you know, the pre-individuation, individuation, like, and trans or whatever, you know, like individuation, like, and how we have to go through that thing. And like this value judgment that I hear thrown around sometimes, it's like, oh yeah, but those indigenous people, they didn't know any better. They couldn't leave. Like, it wasn't possible for them to leave. Or like, it's that sort of that interesting aspect. And then you hear, I read Carol Sanford recently, and she said, you have to realize that in the indigenous context, then the freedom of the warrior is it's a freedom for the community, not from the community. Like, and that to me is, it's such a foreign, if I really sit with that, it's such a foreign concept, you know, and in some way it seems to relate to this piece of coherence. Like, how I understand that word is still, even though I'm sort of peeling back the layers of the onion, it's still a very mechanistic and industrialized way of understanding what coherence is.
Yeah.
You know, and so, yeah.
Yeah. No, it's really, I think that's such an interesting, good point. And yeah, I one of the things I think is so wonderful about the infinite eternal journey is that the perfection is always becoming more perfect. You know, we can recognize our imperfection, like whole, complete, and know that there's an infinite amount of further exaltation and self-actualization into even more degrees of perfection. And I think that there's one of the things that's been really fun and cohere is the cross-pollination of different modalities. And so I've been a big fan of parts theory. And more recently, you know, since from Guatemala, we've been deep in the Mayan astrology methodologies. And it's been really, really fascinating and so on point. And so there's this cross-pollination of modalities that allow us to get deeper into what do we mean by coherence and what is the lived experience of that. And yeah, another point you bring up around like community living is so much of it to me is architectural. It's when we think often of community living, we think of a bunch of people in a single family house that are cohabitating. That doesn't work for people with families or running companies or foundations. Like, our demographic and cohere are people who are future makers, people up to real work in the world that need access to a printer. They need private offices. They need the space to be in their creative state. So much of this, in my opinion, comes down to the architecture. And the modality is something I learned at Taliesin and Taliesin West. It's not rocket science, but private individuated spaces with shared amenities. You know, you have a shared studio, but you also have your home studio. You have a little kitchen at home, but you have the grand commercial kitchen and the shared yoga space. And, you know, that is just such a simple thing that makes communities successful or not. So that the introverts have the ability to feel free to be in their bubble and fully recharge, not be forced to engage. And so that's, I think it's just an important thing that we really spend a lot of time on is what are actually the frameworks for successful communities, especially on the architectural side. Then there's the cultural side. The cultural side, to me, comes down to a huge factor is the superordinate goal. Like, all the research around, like, how do you get two gangs working together? You task them with a much bigger challenge. You know, like the aliens invading Earth, you know, like everyone gets on the same page all of a sudden. For us, we've got in Cohere, it's like, yeah, there's work to do in the world. We are in a sticky place in humanity. It's a make it or break it moment. We're going to make it. We're going to do that through trust and through living in right relations and activating right livelihood in each other. And we're going to do it. And so let's have fun doing it. And that's our North Star.
And in your experience, like, so far, if we would look at sort of the most sort of the more fragile like nodes or points, like where does it seem to be, where are we most likely to kind of break or like fall back into if we talk about trying to transcend out of fear and being more, you know, full, then where is it?
Well, I'd say ego patterns and falling into embedded behavioral patterns that are unconscious. I think the biggest one for me personally is my own. You know, where am I holding back the growth of this organization through my own embedded blind spots? You know, it's been such a huge journey around, I was talking about this at the Create Meaning Loft the other day, around my journey in resetting my nervous system through quitting coffee. and just how, and like learning that I'm ADHD, I have some ADHD tendencies, and how I was using coffee to help focus, but it was also riling me up and like stressing out the team, because I come in, I'm like, I'm already such an energetic person. I don't need stimulants. And so there's been this journey for me around how do I show up as a leader, and how do I like really own my own shit and really take responsibility for my own shortcomings and continue to show up and then role model what it means to be vulnerable and continue to create that health, that safe space where we can be of support to each other, because we all are working through our patterns and our patterning. And then they were still all tied into the collective unconsciousnesses and all the layers. And so it's like a matter of having that grace for one another, but also keeping the standard high. But I'd say like the human dynamic is always the weak link. And it's always just comes down to how do we change ourselves and give the grace to each other to support each other in how we change ourselves and evolve ourselves. And that's just a daily practice.
I love that. And now I lost the name of whoever wrote that, but I just read a newsletter the other day from someone who works with, like, as a coach, and like that type of, but they had revisited or looked at again, sort of the hero's journey, and was kind of pointing to this. It just was so resonant with me, but it was just pointed to this dynamic that we believe that the going out and the slaying of the dragon and like the bringing back the spoils, like, that's the journey. And the proposition was that, well, there's that other journey, which is like you go out, you're slayed by the dragon, you know, you're broken into pieces, you're completely destroyed and devastated and nothing worked out. And you find yourself at 40 with, you know, broken family or no kids or no home or none of the stuff that you imagined would happen. Like none of the success or like fortune that you were envisioning as you were growing up materialized. And then kind of inviting that, like provocating in a way and saying like, well, that's when you should return home. Like in that brokenness, like if you proceed, if you go ahead and return home to your community, to your village, let them hold you and let yourself, be held and also bring that wisdom that it brings with that sort of inherent failure, that complete thrashing of your entire personality. That's the hero's journey. That's a completely different way of understanding it. But we tend to stop. So like tying into what we're talking about now, like we tend to stop short of that. Like as we're like reveling in our shame and like in our failure, it's really hard to pick yourself up by the bootstraps and go home, like to the people that love you, to the people that you have. And so to me, it's like, I don't know, I'm a novice in terms of understanding community. And at the same time, I think that piece feels to be so central, like to have create a culture of allowance for, at the same time you have people that have done things and are on a mission and like doing the whole thing, but like to allow that also to for things to completely blow apart and for have like a place to also sort of mentally rest and invite people to come back even though kind of they failed. I don't know, like if that piece...
Yeah. Huge, man. I think it's such a huge piece. It reminds me of two things. A friend, Danny Bell, who's an amazing consultant for community, was like, we were at a conference in Protopia conference in Costa Rica. We were talking about this. And like, what does it mean to create that culture where we can support the vulnerability and invite it? And it reminds me of this Samuel Jay song that I'm really moved by, about how when we're broken is when our light shines out of the cracks. And it's such a brilliant song. Jeez, it's so good. I feel like he really nails the feeling state of this. And that, I think, is like, if there's an amazing meditation I love around, like, it's through, you go through the vulnerability. You go through it. You don't resist it. And that, I think that's what's called for in the planet right now, especially in how we grapple and come to grips with the context. I love how you're talking about like the analogy, like the person, the individual. I think the humanity is at a point of like, oh crap. You know, we're a little place like things are a little bit on fire. We haven't actually built the beautiful paradise yet. Like, oh shit. Okay. Yeah. I think that if we can hold that vulnerability and that the gentleness and the receiving that and honoring those cracks, then yeah, I think that's what we need.
You also said something early on in terms of let's leave that to side. But I'm also curious about sort of how when it works at the membranics, like who's kind of, because that's something that we've thought a lot about in terms of the communities or like the, when, how do we invite people? Like, how do I check myself to not just be repeating, you know, like that type of abusive relationship dynamics where you're just kind of inviting your own learnings in terms of people? Like, what's the...
It is definitely ever evolving. We're the way our theory on that, it's like an important first principle for us is, you know, reiteration. You know, we just can't get it right. Like we have to just do it, fall on our face, pick ourselves up, learn, obviously we want to be applying wisdom and foresight as best we can, of course. What we're doing right now is we have an application process for people to become members in Cohere, and it's long, it's intentionally long. And it's very, very value ridden. Like, and we then vet people based on that. And they then can come into our online community. And then as we host the collabs, like our co-living experiences around the world, we then have a secondary vetting process where people apply and they have an interview process with one of our team members who is just like extremely intuitive with reading people. That's our system currently. And what we're interested in is how do we then decentralize this? How do we activate the members? Like, one of the things that's been occurring is the people who show up for these are the ones who are super motivated and been sharing the same vision, right? More every day goes by, meets them like, I've had the same vision. Oh my gosh. I'm like, yes, the morphogenetic field is real. Now, how do we coordinate ourselves? Because the vision can be cheap. Now it's like implementation time. And so what we're excited about is how the members, how vetted members, people have really shown up and we know that they're reliable, because it starts as a small pod, then we grow additional pods where we have a group of members who have, like, they're on, we know they're on point and trustworthy, and then they can start to steward more of the onboarding process of members into the ecosystem. And we can slowly accelerate the decentralization so that the organism starts to grow itself. That's our trajectory. And we're just constant, like we just had a community meeting for everybody here on this property in Berlin. And yeah, we just have an open space. I'm like, hey, what's working? What can we get better at? Boom, boom, boom. And just so that rapid reiteration.
Because I think that's interesting as well with regards to, I'm listening a lot to Tyson Yunkaporta because I really appreciate his lens. And I don't know if you're familiar with his thinking, but he has this, he brings in the indigenous. Yeah. And one of the things that he keeps talking about is that aspect of time. Like, so when you were saying like that, like people that have shown up, and I was like, I heard a little question in my head saying, for how long? Like, how long is enough? Or like, how do you prove that you've shown up? And like, how do we kind of break this really fast communications-based cycle and actually anchor some of that stuff? That's what I'm thinking about. You know, it's like, how do we anchor that stuff in actual sort of sweat and blood in a way? Like, how do you, like, in the indigenous communities, you have like eldership, and like there are certain rituals and certain things that are not accessible to you unless you are an elder. And it might seem unfair or like, you know, irrational or whatever, but nonetheless, there's like the wisdom of the community is that you can't go there until you're at this certain age, like, or you've spent this much time in the community, and that, like, there's like an extension. So there's like a slowness built into the process, which is, I think, wise, probably. At least that's how I perceive it. I was wondering about that, like acceleration growth versus, yeah.
It's something that keeps, there's definitely a topic of inquiry for us, for sure. What is the right growth? And how do we, because growth, like, it's an interesting concept inside of this, like the economic model, just like maximum extraction as if there's no shortage of resources. Like, there are, but is there a shortage of love? You know, like, can we radically accelerate love? Can we radically accelerate the restoration of our ecologies and the health of our oceans? And like, maybe we should rapidly accelerate those things. But so I don't think that growth is good or bad in any way. And it's an interesting piece around having premeditated perceptions around we need to hit these targets, right? And that's something that, yeah, like I just yesterday was sharing a deck with our deck with some friends who larger fund managers. And of course, we're sharing our targets. Okay, we're going to hit this. Like, this is our estimated growth targets for these amount of members. And, you know, based on our current projections, we're going to have 1,500 members at the end of the year. That feels really safe. And so it's like when we're raising capital and we're saying, like, we need to give a certain degree of security that we know we're going to hit these baselines. But then we're also looking at like mergers with other companies where we could grow our membership at 50,000 people. And so what is, how do we not have a predetermined idea of how, the analogy we love to use is like we're building the banks of the river, the water knows how to flow. And like, we don't want to like, or like we're growing an oak tree. It's not ours to say how many branches the oak tree has, right? The tree has its own intelligence. And so we're in this inquiry around like, we don't want to throttle growth for fear of growth being bad. And we don't want to grow just for growth's sakes to like for accolades or how cool are we, what we do. We want to be really clear on like what is healthy, what is going to support the growth of this coherent field building and allow us to build more regenerative community assets that have long lead times in a certain macroeconomic context. So no clear answer, obviously, but it's something that we're constantly in the inquiry of and investigating, like, okay, what's our sense making that we're consistent.
I appreciate that inquiry. Because it's, I mean, what I'm hearing you speak to is kind of this, there's like a balance between, I mean, Tyson uses the word like growth versus increase. And I mean, the other sort of the biological more, it would be like this, they made these sort of perfect little ecosystems. Where they would like, there's no stress, just ideal conditions for plants to grow or like trees to grow. And they were able to grow really fast. And then they reached a point and then just toppled over because a lot of the parts of the formation of the tree is like being exposed to wind and stresses and that sort of complexification. That's like what goes under the increase, like to create that stress wood, it's sort of the resilience of the tree is dependent on sort of a certain slowness or a certain level of like having to respond to different shocks and different things. And that can only happen if it's around in, you know, a relevant context for whatever you're trying to build. So just, that came up as he was talking about the oak trees. Like, it's not about necessarily how big, how fat can we make the trunk? Like what, but like, there's also something that needs to go on inside it that, that makes it stand.
I really appreciate you saying that because what occurs for me is in the messiness of, and like starting a company, it's like, it's part of like, and again, for us, like this, the whole journey of this is how like, is the deeper fundamental, of like how do we grow our awareness through building something that we feel is going to be in real service to humanity, at least in a, you know, in a small or big scale, who knows how big this thing grows. That we believe that this can grow. The whole point of this is for it to grow and be a prototype that's replicable. We want this to actually grow to grow to real scale. We'll see. But at the end of the day, the fundamental piece for us is growing our coherence and our self-awareness. And we believe that the more self-aware we are, the more readily we can actually be of service and activation to the things that are needed in the world. And what I love about what you're bringing up around this is the stresses are what actually creates the strength. And I love that because then it recontextualizes and gets us out of misplaced morality around, oh, something didn't go the way we expected, so we label it bad, versus, oh my God, that is like literally the human experience is to be on this roller coaster and like feel all the feelings. It's not about just having this cush lifestyle where we just are building paradise. We don't have to deal with anything and anything we deal with is bad. It's like, no, it's like honoring that journey and the stress for this, like what it creates for us. So I really appreciate you saying that.
I'm really curious to follow along with the stuff that you're doing. I mean, I think it's fascinating, and I love how you think about the ownership piece and like how you think about this community building piece, and like it just overlaps with so many of the inquiries that we're in at the moment, and part of like also building in terms of like we have our organizational model, and we've been like kind of thinking about and like working with this aspect of like how do you build an economic system around maximizing difference, which I think is another sort of key pillar of this industrial paradigm, like which is like where there's more pushing towards sameness and repeatability, and like at the expense of almost everything else, including like quality and actual need and all of that stuff. It's like necessity is not the goddess in this current system, I would argue. I don't know. I could like circle around this stuff, and then also like feeling like, yeah, it's like it's kind of there's a plateau here where it's like it might make sense to stop. And at the same time, I'm like, what are the things that I missed? Like, what are the things that I didn't see because of my programming?
Gosh, isn't that the question? Isn't that the question? You know, what is embedded filtration through which we perceive everything, so that we don't see anything other than the preconceived notions? That's my daily inquiry into like, that's the biggest inspiration in life for me, is what are those things, and like being so we can be like fully free to fully experience the magic of life. Yeah, it's great to be able to share here what we're doing. I'm really, I'm excited to drop in more on what you were just noting, what the systems that you guys are developing. And I think maximum, like diversity is so key, especially when it's built around values and not metrics. When people reduce to metrics, it's the same industrialization bullshit applied in a very inappropriate way. Because the intention is to increase diversity is for resilience and strength and inclusivity. And when we can do that around shared values, then it's like coherence. Like people have talked about often, you know, okay, what's your market demographic? You know, what's your age bracket? It's like, no, we don't have that. It's about the values. We have all generations and ages and ethnicities and backgrounds here. And because they're all people who really give a shit about how do we build systems that work. And so the idea that we're going to have a certain ratio of this or that type of person, or, you know, we're all, and we can box people into these little categories so we can better project our returns, is just missing the whole freaking point and the genius of what it means to be human. And so let's maximize that diversity for the resilience around those who are really motivated by stepping up and building the infrastructure, building the tool sets, building the awareness that we need to thrive right now.
Yeah, thanks for saying that. And also, you know, I mean, just that word that you're invoking in terms of, I mean, cohere and coherence, to me is like it fails in two ways, right? Which might be obvious. Like you can fail into conflict, which is one thing. That's the obvious one. But then I think you can also fail into sameness. Like you just fail into like completely flattening the space, like where there's no depth and where everybody's just like cheering everybody else on. That's just psychosis, or like that, then it becomes a sect. And both of those paths are I think detrimental to what you're trying to build here, which is, you know, antithetical to life in a way.
Yeah, great point. Great point.
Cool. So if people want to, what do you need right now? If we would just put that out there, I don't know who listens really. So
yeah, I mean, I think what I really want is not to have to create a large fund. I really want a progressive fund to partner with us and bring large amounts of capital to these regenerative projects. Hmm. I would love not to have to work on raising, you know, $50 million. Instead, continue to do what we do best, which is vetting these properties, bring people together, designing these spaces, and lining up these deal flows using traditional terminology, and really bring in significant funding to accelerate this movement of regenerative infrastructure development that has liquidity through tokenization. That's one piece. The other thing that I want is, just to embody for myself, embody more wisdom, just continue to up-level myself and up be of service to up-leveling the team into. I really want to continue to call in the people who are motivated to be part of this. You know, I'm really looking for, we're just constantly looking at how do we grow the leadership team. And something I always talk about is, you know, my job is to find the right people for the right position. You know, so how do we call in the leaders who are significantly more skilled than myself? You know, how do we bring in the people who have who are the elders and have 40 more years of experience than myself, who can come in and CEO this thing or can come in and operationalize this thing to a whole nother level? Like for us, it's the humility to know that we don't know shit. And it's constantly a search for how do we bring in those right aligned people who are holding that wisdom and we can apply that wisdom to the health of this growing ecosystem. So those are a couple of things that just the talent, the resources to allow us to grow this at an increasing rate that feels this in right relation and healthy.
Beautiful. And if people want to get in touch or look deeper into Cohere, where would you direct them?
Yeah, cohere.network is our website. There's an application to become a member if one feels called. And then my email is Dakota with an H, Dakotah, at cohere.network. And then we're available, you know, through all the different channels, you know, LinkedIn or Instagram or all the things.
Awesome. I'll put some links in the show notes as well. Thank you so much for taking the time. This is it's really nice to sit together and to look at this thing that you're building. Wonderful. I'd love to. I'm going to follow along for sure. So.
Well, thank you, brother. I really appreciate the invite to share here. And I also want to thank you for your work in how you're collating wisdom from so many leaders around the planet. And I think it's incredibly important work right now because it's how we flywheel the know-how. And I really appreciate what you're doing in collating the sages that you're doing on your podcast. And it's an honor to be here and share a little bit about what we're doing. And I just really want to recognize what you're doing and how crazy important a flywheel it is to collate wisdom. So thank you.
I appreciate it.